In introducing tonight's speaker, our Rebbe, Rav Aaron Rachefet, I can't help but be reminded of Rav Rachefet's Rebbe, of the Rav's memorable drasha about Yaakov Avinu, the first Jewish grandfather, where the Rav quoted Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah in the second parak of Eidos, and Rabbi Akiva in enumerating those qualities which a father bequeaths to his son, and Chazal tell us, Banecha Elu HaTalmidim, a Rebbe is parallel to a father, and the Talmidim are as if his children. What does the father, what does the Rebbe bequeath? One of the items Rabbi Akiva enumerates is, Uvemispar Hadoros Lefanav. The Mispar Hadoros Lefanav, the number of the generations that came before him. And perhaps the Rav Darshan's not only Mispar, but Misipur, the story of the generations that came before. The Rav explains that in our times, we often find a generation gap. The young generation doesn't understand where the old people are coming from. The old people don't understand the shtuyot, the nonsense of these kids, except in the Beit Midrash. Except when we're dealing with transmission of Mesorah. In the Beit Midrash, there is no generation gap. In the Mesorah Fellowship, when Torah is being passed on and learned together, there is no generation gap between father and son, between grandfather and grandson, between the older Rebbe and the new young Talmidim. We are all fellows in the community of Mesorah. And not only that, says the Rav, but there is not even a generation gap between the young Talmid and the long-deceased mentors and teachers of his Rebbe, who lived in a different world perhaps, in a different continent, in a different era. We all sit together in the Beit Midrash from the Tanaim and Amoraim, Rishonim and Achronim, in the fellowship of the Mesorah community, where there is no gap between the past, the present, and the future. Rabbi Rachefet is perhaps famous for being, say this diplomatically, of the not the newest, youngest generation, but forging an immediate bond, a bond of fellowship, a bond of mutual understanding with Talmidim who have just begun to participate in receiving this Mesorah. And the greatness of Rabbi Rachefet is that not only does he bridge the gap between himself and Talmidim, who may be a few decades his juniors, but between his great Rebbeim, between the Rav of Soloveitchik, between those who have, whose biographies are being republished right now, Rav Lazer Silber, Rabbi Dr. Revel, and other Gedolim luminaries of the past generations. The Mispar Dor Shalafanav is what Rabbi Rachefet bequeaths to us. Rabbi Rachefet, I've heard it said that he is a historian. But Rabbi Rachefet is not a historian. A participant in the Mesorah community is not a historian. A historian writes books about dead people. Rabbi Rachefet brings his mentors in the past generation to life and brings their wisdom and their Mesorah to bear on the contemporary issues in the lives of Talmidim from all generations. It is for that that we are exceedingly grateful for the opportunity on this occasion and on many other such occasions to hear and learn from Rabbi Rachefet's Mesorah, and it is so exciting that some of his books about those great mentors are being republished so that they will be available to bring those members of our Mesorah alive for our generation, and it is a great pleasure and honor for me tonight to introduce Rabbi Rachefet.
I welcome everyone to my classroom, and just to help those listening across the big expanse of the Torah community, today is Thursday evening, the 29th of May, 2014. I apologize to my students this past week. The Pope scored a a technical knockout on Sunday and a total knockout on Monday, and my classes had to be canceled, pasik mavra. I couldn't get across the bridge, to quote the Gemara. I want to dedicate the Divrei Torah that I will state tonight in memory of a great individual who passed on just a week ago, Reb Moshe Horowitz. I can say with all truth that I'm only standing here. Wait, I must have absolute attention. I can't have anyone whispering. It harms my voice. The mic is better. We'll try. Reb Moshe Horowitz, I came in Aliyah in 69, and I had a contract because of Bernard Rebel. My doctorate already had a contract with Jewish Publication Society. Those of you who recall, it was the first so-called Orthodox book that they agreed to publish, and it put me into a new status, and people in Israel saw someone who has a contract with JPS, Jewish Publication Society, wants to come in Aliyah, and I was immediately interviewed and given a contract by the Encyclopedia Judaica, and I came, I started work. I had just finished 10 years of teaching in the United States, the Talmud Torah, the rabbinate, Yeshiva University, and Reb Moshe Horowitz called me and asked me to give a class in a new school that was beginning, BMT, and as they say, the rest is history. And Reb Moshe was unique. He bridged the gap, as Rabbi Bednach said so beautifully, and as I will try to put into Midrashic language this evening, he bridged the gap between an Anglo kid and the sanctity of Jerusalem. And the tens and tens of thousands of young people who have been educated, and many have come in Aliyah, BMT under the tutelage of Reb Moshe Horowitz, Whitey as we all called him. He had a brother, Brownie. I yet knew his father. I yet knew Brownie. I knew Whitey. What a family. Leah, Zichrona Livracha, his wonderful wife, a Robinson, and what a family. And everything that's happened subsequently goes back to Reb Moshe Horowitz. So I fondly and humbly recall his memory. Rabbi Revel asked a simple question. Why did Torah finally take hold in America? Jews have been in America since 1654. And the history of the United States is that of a spiritual Holocaust. We don't have to go any further than the president, the present Secretary of State. I believe his name is Cohn. When his grandfather converted to Catholicism, the moron changed his name to a Balkeri. We had a Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright. Imagine a woman become Secretary of State of the so-called most powerful country of the world, and she doesn't know her own grandparents are Jewish, and that she is Jewish, and that they perished in the Holocaust. Who could believe that Ralph Branca, who, by the way, that's the secret of my success, it's Shasim Paiskim and a little baseball knowledge, one of the boys. Who could believe that Ralph Branca, who destroyed the world back in 1951 with that home run to Bobby Thompson, who could believe that he is Jewish? From an Ungarische family of like 9-10 children, and he wrote to his parents in Hungary, would you mind, would you mind if I became a Catholic? It was a front page article in the paper of assimilation, the New York Times. So Rabbi Revel asked a wonderful question. Jews have been in America since 1654 and they have absolutely nothing to show for it. The first minister in America was Satius. He was Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, Mendy Satius, and his great-great-great-great-great-grandson, seven generations removed, when I was growing up, Vic Satius, number one tennis player in America, a pure, total wasp. And Rabbi Rebel said so beautifully. He quoted the Midrash. I will give it to you. Bereshit Rabbah, Pasha Pei Bet, subdivision Bet, Demut Yaakov Chakukah Al Kisei Hakavod. And Rabbi Revel asked a simple question. On the heavenly throne, the image is that of Yaakov Avinu. Where is Yitzchak Avinu? Where is Avraham Avinu? Why Dafka Yaakov Avinu? And Rabbi Revel said so beautifully, Avraham Avinu, what did he represent? He represented Chesed, Eisha, Lachia, Shtia, Lina. The first Jews that came to America and came in numbers, the German Jews, the Prussian Jews, the Bavarian Jews, they represented Chesed. They built hospitals, fraternal organizations. Chesed. Okay? Yitzchak Avinu, following the Civil War, the Jews in Europe started to learn about America. They were very interested. Brother kills brother, cousin kills cousin over slaves. They followed in every shtibble and every hoif. Outside the shtibble, Tzivishin Minchin Marev, what did they speak about? The latest news from America, the Civil War. It was a reality. The Polish Jews started coming. They're closer to Germany. They learned about it first. What did they do? Yitzchak Avinu, Avodat Hashem, Hachamoria, Akedat Yitzchak. They built endless shtiblach of Avodat Hashem, of Tefillah. But what came out of it? And then the Litvakin started to come. Yaakov Avinu. What characterizes Yaakov Avinu? Ishtam Yosebo Halim Lo Mashmi Ohel Shel Torah. Yaakov Avinu? Totally learning, totally immersed in Torah. The Litvakin came, and in 1886 they opened the first yeshiva in America, Yeshivat Eitz Chaim, which of course is the granddaddy of Yeshiva University, Yeshivas Reb Tzvi Chanan. You can read all about it in the Revel book. When the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted a demut on the Kisei HaKavod, he wanted the demut from which Klal Yisrael was built, the Shiftei Kod, the Bnei Yisrael, not Avraham, not Yitzchak, Yaakov, 12 magnificent sons, and that succeeded, it took root, and it gives us the Jewish people alive, kicking, producing until this very moment. The Mut Yaakov Chakuka Al Kisei HaKavod. The mid-50s, the high point of life in America, was not the World Series, with all due respect to Rakefet. The high point of life in America was the Rav's Yogzeit Russia for his father. Ah, what an experience, Gimel Shvat. And in the mid-50s, the middle of the Agada, the Rav quoted this very same Medrash. And the Rav raised the exact question, why Yaakov? And he told us a story that is not just an allegory. I have authenticated it. 1929, the second Knessia of Agudat Yisrael in Vienna. How many of you were there? I was there. Okay, two of us were there. Thank God I have a grandson who understands his grandfather. If you don't live Jewish history, you can't understand, you can't appreciate who we are and where we're going B'ezrat Hashem. So at the second Knessia, the Chofetz Chaim, who was then very aged, came and gave Birchat Kohanim. And Rav Meir Shapiro came over to the Chofetz Chaim, the Lublino Rav, the person who popularized the Daf Yomi, the founder of Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Rav Meir Shapiro came over to the Chofetz Chaim and he said to the Chofetz Chaim, Rebbe, in Vil Machina, build for Mike. We want to take your picture. And the Chofetz Chaim looked at him, was darf man a Bild? Ich kenne nicht das eigene Sache, ich kenne das nicht, it's not in my league. Didn't want to. And the Meir Shapiro said, Rebbe, ich will bring in a raya, I'll bring you a proof that you have to allow us to take your picture.
No, the Chaim heard that Meir Shapiro was an Eloi. He got all excited. No, Buzz had him, let me hear. And Rav Meir Shapiro quoted this very medrash. The Rav is telling us this. I used this, by the way, my first night in Australia, not realizing that in Australia the Mizrahi and Chabad are very amalgamated. And I told this story to an Olam that turned out to be more than half Hasidic. And I became a hero overnight, that a Litvak can tell a Hasidic story and can upteich in good and can explain it well. No, I have that from my Rebbe Baruch Hashem. So the Rav said, Rabbi Shapiro said to the Chafetz Chaim, Rebbe, the Mut Yaakov, was is mit Avram, was is mit Yitzchak, why only Yaakov? And the Chafetz Chaim, no, a good shaila, a good question. And Rav Meir Shapiro explained, Rebbe, Chab Meir, I'm very afraid, Mingein Arayin and Afinster in Dulles, but the Jews are up ahead, 1929, and the anti-Semitism and the outcome of World War I and Hitler, I'm very afraid we're going into a very dark, black Dulles. Let us have a picture of what a Jew looked like before the Dulles. Avraham Avinu lived in Israel, lived in Palestine, lived in Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak never left Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu went down to Golas Mitzrayim. The Ribbono Shel Olam had gewollt a bild, the Hayit had ausgeguckt for the Golas. And that's why the Mut Yaakov Chakuka Al Kisei HaKavod. I heard that from the Rav. Rav Lezer Silva, who are you talking about? You're talking about a Litvisher Rav, the son of a Litvisher Rav who came to America, who wanted to sell insurance. And like all good rabbis who go into business, he failed. No, it's a fact. It's a fact. I can give you many examples, not important now. And he took a little rabbinate in Harrisburg. And from that little rabbinate, you had in America Reform rabbis, Americanized rabbis. The seminary was graduating rabbis, although they were still basically Orthodox at the time. But these were American rabbis, as I quote in the Rebbe book, the immigrants laughed at them. A whole year they learned one Masechet Megillah, that back in Europe a kid learned Masechet Megillah from Sunday to Thursday. By Erev Shabbos he made a siyum already. So here was a man who brought the dignity of the rabbinate of yesteryear to the United States. And I'll tell you something I heard from the Rav about Rav Lezer Silva. I heard many things, but this captures Rav Lezer. He was the first American made gadol. Not born in America, but the first American in America. You know what I'm saying? Very simple. Rav Lezer Silva left Europe. He was a young man yet. His son told me, you know why he left Europe? Because he wandered into the Strassoon Library, which was the biggest library of Svarim in all of Europe, destroyed by Hitler. This is in Vilna. And he wandered in, and there was a young lady working there, a librarian. And he took one look at her, and the rest is history. Oy vey, his father was Gestapo Rav, the Rav's son macht für sich allein a shidduch. He's making his own shidduch, not depending upon others. He got married, came to America, took a shteller in Harrisburg, and in Harrisburg, when he finished what he had to do for the city, from 3-4 o'clock on until 12-1 at night, he sat in the shul and learned. And his learning, he came to America an Eloi, but a Gaon he became in Harrisburg. By the time he left Harrisburg in 1925 to go to Springfield, and then I believe it was 1931, and you have all the facts in the Silver era, he goes to Cincinnati. This is Rav Lezer Silva, a Gaon Adir, a Europeish Rav with the dignity of the rabbinate of Europe, the president of the Agudas HaRabbanim, which then was the most important rabbinical organization, I would say, in the world, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis. And of course, you all know the famous anecdote. I've never been able to prove it, but you all know the famous story of Laser rushing to the airport in a taxi, and the taxi is hailed down by a policeman for speeding, and the poor taxi driver says, "Officer, officer, I have the chief rabbi of the United States sitting in back," and Reb Laser pops up, "and Canada." So, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis of the United States and Canada. Wow. So you have here Talmud Torah, you have here the Rabbanut, but you have a very important Gemara, which is the tremendous challenge to the Dmut Yaakov. And this is a Gemara that we struggle with. We have struggled with it for thousands of years, particularly since 1762, when Moshe Mendelssohn left the ghetto. We struggle with it today. It's in the headlines all over the internet. Go to any Torah website. Look what happened at the Aguda convention just a few days ago in New York, the Novominska. And this is the heart of why you and we here in Gris too, we struggled with this daily. What a Gemara. Gemara in Menachat. Daf Chaf Chet Amid Aleph. I quote the Gemara. Kol HaKelim She'asa Moshe Ksheirim lo uksheirim ledorot. Chatzotzrot kisheirat lo upsulot ledorot. What's the Gemara saying? Go to the old city, Chol HaMoed Sukkot, Chol HaMoed Pesach. Too bad we don't have a Chol HaMoed around Shavuot. You'll see on display Kli Beis Mikdash already prepared. Beautiful, the menorah, built according to our custom, tradition, halacha. Kelim ready. You make a kli for the Beis Mikdash, it's kasha 3,000 years ago, and it can be used today, tomorrow, and thousands of years from now. It never grows old, it never has to be put into storage. Comes to the Chatzotzrot, the trumpets. Moshe Rabbeinu made trumpets, constructed trumpets, kashelo, but the minute he dies, buried in the ground. Get rid of it. You can't pass it on. An open Gemara. What is the Gemara saying? What is the message? What is the Gemara telling us? There's something very unique about the Chatzotzrot. The Chatzotzrot, look into Bahalotcha, we'll soon be reading it in the Torah. V'hayu lecha lemikraha eda ulemasa tamachanot. The Chatzotzrot, the trumpets, is the way the leader communicates with the nation, with the people. And in communication, the way we spoke and taught 100 years ago will not be successful today. Every generation has to blow its own unique trumpet. The leaders, Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Silva, whatever their name is, you have to know how to speak to the generation. The other kelim, ksheirim ledorot, the chatzotzrot, for you it's good. To use your method tomorrow will be a tragedy. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet Amid Bet, Dor Dor V'Doshav, Dor Dor V'Chachamav. What a Gemara. Every generation needs its rabbis, its leaders, its teachers, its Rashi Yeshiva, who can speak in the nuance, the understanding of the generation. This is our greatest challenge, to take yesteryear and put it to use today will be only partially successful. And yet, when we try to rearrange the call of the trumpet, chas v'chalila, we cannot compromise the heart, the soul, the configuration, the gestalt of Torah Hashem Tamimah. And this is a difficulty, a challenge, an enigma, a quest that we face daily as we attempt, and I use Rabbi Bednash's introduction, as we attempt to teach Torah in the year 2014, the Torah that I received in 1954, but a Torah that I want to be alive and applicable and successful and dynamic 50 years from now as well. How do we find the proper chatzotzrat to blow, to sound, to influence? And of course, let's say a few words to illustrate this. Talk about Rabbi Revel, talk about Rabbi Silva. Rabbi Revel, what a man of vision. Here there was a yeshiva, students were on strike, the Lower East Side of New York, Montgomery Street, then Henry Street first, Montgomery Street afterwards, East Broadway. They want to learn a little English. They're greenhorns. And the people giving money to the yeshiva, the balabatim giving money, said, over our dead bodies, we are busy making money, we're busy in real estate, we're busy running stores, we're busy manufacturing. We don't have to know such a good English. It's genug ben dafret in Yiddish and a little bit English for the goyim we deal with. And we want to give money for you to study Torah, not for anything else. And the students went on strike. This is all documented. Read Revel. And finally, the Rabbanim, and particularly Rab Dov Aryeh HaKohen Leventhal, whose direct descendants we've had as students in the Kollel, they came out in favor of the students, but they needed an individual. Who can you find? And here was a miracle. Rabbi Revel had arrived in America in 1906, running away from the communists, running away from the Bolsheviks, running away from the Tsar. He had been in jail in Kovna in 1905. And in America, Ilui Shekov, photographic memory, gets the first PhD from Dropsy College. Makes Rabbi Moshe Bick, remember the name, anyone here from the Bronx? Rabbi Moshe Bick told me this was the first shidduch made in America. Rabbi Zivitz of Pittsburgh made a shidduch with Rabbi Revel, who was in the home of Rabbi Leventhal of Philadelphia, with a young lady from Marietta, Ohio, from an old Lubavitch family, Sarah Travis. And he now had a wife, a PhD, endless learning, and a wealthy family. And there he was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, half a day in the oil fields, the other half of the day writing Chidushei Torah, and they pleaded with him, come to New York and build us a yeshiva with general studies. 1916, Talmudic Academy. 1919, the first smicha program, when five young men got smicha who studied in the yeshiva. These were not European-trained rabbis. Among them, the first-born American musmach of the yeshiva. Can anyone tell me who? Rabbi Saul B. Friedman. No, Herbert S. Goldstein is JTS. You're confusing two institutions. First American-born graduate of yeshivas, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Saul B. Friedman, later the rabbi of Young Israel of Washington Heights, and a lawyer. Anyone here from Washington Heights, the name Saul B. Friedman, you will remember. And he builds Yeshiva College. What this man achieved, the trumpets he blew, the beautiful interconnection with yesteryear and today. Reb Lazer Silva, no Yudapeya Sharav integrated as well as he did on the American scene. He could open up the doors to the White House, as you know. when he comes to Cincinnati, the women complain bitterly about the mikveh in the old area of Cincinnati, broken down, a disgrace. And he goes to the finest area to build a new mikveh. The Reformed Jews, Hebrew Union College, go crazy and they go to court to stop Reb Lazer from building the mikveh. He gets the son of the President of the United States, Senator, the future Senator Robert Taft, to represent him in court. And he sits down with Senator Taft, and he gives him 10 reasons why we need a mikveh. Erev Rosh Hashanah, and Erev Yom Kippur, and Kalim. And the 10th reason is Lahatir Isha Labala. And Senator Taft says to Reb Lazer, I think that the last reason is the most important. I have to tell you, when Senator Taft to be shows up in court, the Reform dropped the lawsuit because they knew they were lost. And here, let me tell you a story, and then let me give you the Reb Lazer silver addendum to the story. By the way, all this is in the silver era. But the story I'm about to tell you, why you suddenly listen to little Aaron Rakefet. You cannot believe it. What happened? A year or two ago, I wound up in Seattle, on the West Coast. So I come to Seattle, I'm giving lectures, I'm looking over the Jewish community, and I see the most famous person in Seattle is my classmate, Josh Gortler. Josh Gortler, he's the world-class, renowned on building facilities for senior citizens. So I came back to IU. Chihuly is a great admirer of Josh Gortler. He gives him artwork once a year to auction off for the great home that he builds for seniors. It's like a little city. So I come back to IU and I say, give Josh Gortler an honorary doctorate. Believe it or not, at the commencement, I believe it's next week or 2 weeks from now, Josh Gortler is getting an honorary doctorate, courtesy Aaron Rakefet. Helps people become rabbis. If you know my work with Soviet Russia, I crowned tzaddikim, and Baruch Hashem, I now awarded my first honorary doctorate. But you don't realize the story of Josh Gortler. Josh Gortler, survivor, the parents, survivors, wound up in Phoenix, working, I think, in a hotel. His parents were so worried, Vasmet Zayn, with their one and only son, and they put $20 in his pocket. This is a true story. I told President Richard Joe last week or 2 weeks ago now, see that public relations jumps on this. Even the New York Times can put it on its front page. Comes to New York, they gave him an address, $20 in his pocket, and they take the kid uptown to Yeshiva University. He's all of 14 at the time. And Dean Zah, you know, sees a kid, a survivor. He knows very little. He sends him to Reb Mendel Zaks, the Bochen, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. And Reb Mendel, who himself was a survivor, basically saved by the yeshiva from Hitler and had to relocate 41 in the United States, with all that goes with it, the relocation and the tragedy of someone who was and now a whole new world. I've written about this in the Washington in my best book, my seventh book. So Reb Mendel asks, I heard the story from Josh, I cry. He says to Josh, he says, when V. Heistman, so he says, well, my Yiddish name is Yoshua, but Aleph Mir Jimmy, James. My English name is James. And Reb Mendel says to this kid, he says, name James is nicht a Yiddish name. And he says, Nutz use Joshua, and Aleph al Nachrufin Josh. And that's how Josh Gortler got his name, from Reb Mendel Zaks. The rest is history. And what a schut YU has. So you wonder, why am I telling you the story? So let me tell you a little story. You all know the world has moved today into a certain kanot, moved right. If you heard my interview with Zev Brenner on the radio, he interviewed everyone. He ran after me 30 years ago to interview me. I hot the cup, the swing to the right, the swing to the right. I don't know. I'm not swinging anywhere. I'm living in 51 and I'm looking at my Rebbe and then a Baruch Hashem. I have nothing to swing, not left, not right. I'm very happy where I am and I'm not afraid of anyone. I'm not afraid of the right, not afraid of the left. I can hold my own. But all right, finally, I didn't want to be interviewed because Bernard Rebel Graduate School got good. Okay, so I was interviewed. It's on the YU website now. So again, you'll hear the whole swing to the right. So there's a swing to the right. So now there was a Poli Aguda convention. It has to be in the 50s, and they elect Fabian Schoenfeld president. This is in the Soviet era, documented. And some kanoi gets up, and he starts shouting, "Was for nomen is das Fabian, a goyishe nomen? What kind of name is Fabian, a Gentile name?" And Rav Leizer Silver gets up, "Herr Trug, the best Talmud from Rabbeinu Tam is given. Was hat er gewirrt, er geheißen? The top Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, what was his name?" Rabbeinu Keter, Peter, right or wrong, that's the famous Rabbeinu Keter, who said he would bring Tam himself to a Kohen if someone is like Rabbeinu Tam. And Rav Leizer says, "Ete ken heisen Peter, und unser President ken sich heisen Fabian." It's not a contradiction. And you see, that was Rav Leizer Silver. So let me summarize and let me come into a very important final point. There's no question that these two individuals came to barren soil. America of 1906 when Rabbi Rebel came, and 1907 when Reb Leizer came. It's not America of today. And each one, in his own way, tried to bring the Demut Yaakov to America. But they both had to struggle with the inevitable consequence of taking Torah Tashem Temima and translating it to the American scene. And to a certain degree, they had great success. I don't have to tell you what Yeshiva University is, despite its present economic crisis. Rav Leizer Silver, the example, the achievements, what this man accomplished on America, Devar HaTzalar alone, how many lives he saved, the Mir Yeshiva, the Shanghai crowd, it's all Rav Leizer. They had great success. But my name is Aaron Rakefet. And my life has a much more basic message. It's a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Chaf Ket Amid Aleph. Atidin batei kinesiyot ubatei medrashot sheyikvavu be'eretz Yisrael. Our sages tell us, and this is a Gemara, and you find it in Medrash as well, that in the future, the great yeshiva, the great Batei Medrash are going to come and aliyah. And Baruch Hashem, what we have today in Israel, more than 6 million halachic Jews, and I underline the word halachic, because American morons will tell me there are 5 million Jews here. 5 million Jews in America? If you have 2,500,000 halachic Jews, I'll dance a kazatska in Red Square. 6 million plus. Look at the statistics before Yom Yerushalayim. Look at Yerushalayim alone. What a kibbutz Goliath. What miracles are happening here. I walk in Katam, when I walk in Rechavi, I walk in Shari Chesed, you don't find one person over 21 years of age speaking Hebrew. They're speaking English, they're speaking French, they're speaking Russian. If you speak Hebrew, they arrest you for desecration of airspace. And then you see kids 18 months old, 2 years old, totally fluent in Hebrew. They are totally fluent in Hebrew. At Tuya Halavai, Eliezer ben Yehuda should see what miracles are happening. Among these miracles, take a look where we are Grus, why you? Look at our presence here. Look what we've accomplished here. I can let you in on a little secret that my colleagues in America, Gedolei Rashi Yeshiva, just told me a week or two ago that top Rashi Yeshiva from here, they gave me names, said to them, and I quote word by word, Halavai, why you should come to Israel and open up a YU. You have the key for modern times. A terrific yeshiva, YU has given out Lamdanim, equal to Lakewood, equal to Panovich, equal to Mir. I don't say we're better, but we can hold our own with any great yeshiva in the world. And YU, Baruch Hashem, no one's an umgluk, no one's a tragedy. A Satma kid just graduated, he's going to law school. You all saw the papers, the publicity, the websites, what's going on now that the first Satma graduate, Baruch Hashem, Midbard and Peyus and Langebogodim and Agatul, the works, and he's the happiest kid, and his parents are there at the graduation. Beautiful to see. Halavai. We could have, so the Rashi Yeshiva said to him, so why don't you open up a YU? Oh, if we open up a YU, you know, today's world, which I'll talk about Sunday, I'm giving a Musa talk Sunday, 5:15, you're all invited. Just tell Sherry if you're coming so she can arrange ample seating. It's in the Kollel. If we open up, we'll be castigated, put into Cherem, called every name in the world. All the posters in Mea Shearim will curse us for eternity. But if you open it up, you'll get away with it. And let me go to Reb Lazer Silva. He left a beautiful family. I knew his son, his daughter-in-law, very well, very close, wonderful people. Grandchildren. We have three outstanding grandchildren of Reb Lazer who are making fabulous contributions on the Israeli scene. One is sitting right here, Reb Aaron, a Ram at Yeshiva Kerem B'Yavna. It's a grandson. Married to a student of mine, right or wrong, Shoshana. Another granddaughter, Reb Lazer. It's the first wedding I attended in Israel, and I can tell you at the wedding, Rav Cook, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook was Masada Kedushin. This goes back to 69, I believe, and they were mechabed me to be an aide on the ketuvah, and behind my back, or an aide under the chuppah, I forget already, and behind my back, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Reske, im ani shomer Shabbat, yein li zakan, v'yech shani nireh, hu badak im ani shomer Shabbat. Later in life, my closest friend was his brother-in-law, my dear neighbor, my revered Reb Yehoshua Hutner. At that point, I didn't realize that Rabbi Yehoshua Hutner, we were just new to the building, 18 Berlin, or maybe we hadn't even moved in yet, maybe we're still in Mekaz Klipa. He was, Rav Hutner was married to his sister. So at that wedding, who did Reb Lazer Silva's granddaughter marry? Adina married a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Rav David Chai Kohen. I believe he did Chesed at Kerem B'Yavna, correct me if I'm wrong. He was at Sanchan, and he did Chesed. What did he do in the army? He was Kravi, that's what I remember, no? What did he do? Tell me, no? He had to do something in the army, you just can't wander around there. I did army. Even when you wander around, they know who's wandering and who's doing. What a Talmud Chacham, right or wrong? What a Talmud Chacham, what he built in Bat Yam, a whole series of institutions. And you should see, I saw the year, I only object to these, with whatever they call them, sailors going off, if they don't play Hatikvah. If you're going to keep them on, change it, program it, it has to play Hatikvah. So I have to tell you, you know that your sister and brother-in-law came to my home recently. Some incident that happened, we had to give advice and work it out together. So I have to tell you, your brother-in-law came in with his driver. The Yira HaKava that he had, I couldn't believe it. He wouldn't sit within Dalan Amad of the Rav. You follow me? We Ashkenazim have a lot to learn
from the Eidot HaMizrach. And then there's a third granddaughter who just won a prize and accomplished miracles for Israel. New Rachel Gershuni, Mizrach HaMishpatim. I don't want to go into what she accomplished, but the American government cited her. She is responsible for stopping the sex traffic, Lo Aleinu, that went on in Israel. She is responsible for heavy prison sentences which have practically erased it and aggregated it altogether. That is Rachel Gershuni. That's the daughter of Rav Yehuda Gershuni, Rav Zilber's son-in-law, the great Eloi. What a family. Baruch Hashem, the heart of the family has come in Aliyah. And finally, I conclude, and this is what I promised you, Rabbi, in a story that will warm your heart. The Rebbe's story, and you don't have to believe me, but Bididi Havi Uvda, and I could be a Rebbe, I have a title, the Maplewood Rebbe. You can appreciate that title. You can't have an Israeli title, you're not a Rebbe, but you take some Fashnuk in a place in Chutz Laritz, the Maplewood Rebbe. The only problem is I don't want to be a Rebbe. Chassidim I have, the title I have. For a few dollars, I get the clothes. 30 days, I can have a nice beard. No big deal. But, all right, I want to remain Aaron Rakefet, with the Chatzotzrat that I understand. So I want to end off with an unbelievable story. Some of you know it's no secret today, not a secret at all, that my wife and I have to give the credit to my wife. We worked for the Mossad for 10 years in communist Russia. 10 years of our lives, we lived a dual existence. We were younger. By day, we were normal people. By night, we were involved. I was responsible for the study of Talmud in the Refusnik community. You don't have to believe one word I'm saying. The chapters in Washington went through censorship, but believe it or not, much to my chagrin and shock, because it takes away Olam Haba, the Mossad just published a book a few months ago called Benetiv Hadmama, and the stars of the book are two people named Malka v'Aharon. So you can read the book in Hebrew, and you don't have to believe one word that Rakefet wrote in Washington. So I want to tell you something. If this were 1980, when the Mossad tapped me on the shoulders, and they had done a total investigation of who I am. When I got that original call, I write in Washington, and I think they quote me as well in Netiv HaDmama. I was shaking because they knew everything about me, my wife, my children, who's who. Do you know that I today could not go? The Mossad would nix me immediately for reasons that I had when I recommended people. You have a member of your family who's in security. Without going into detail, one of my sons-in-law has been in the security of the State of Israel from the day he came into the family, and a son-in-law like that would eliminate Rakefet's going. Okay, but that was 1980. My son-in-law was not yet in the family. He was a youngster studying in Machon Lev. 1963 it has to be, I'm walking in the hallway of Bernard Revel Graduate School, and the great Mrs. Carden, Mrs. Pearl Carden, Zichronat Sadeket Levracha, says to me, "Arnold, you're just about to complete all your coursework, you better get a topic. I know you rabbis, you get so involved you'll never do a thesis and you won't have your doctorate." So I went into Dr. Rolander, the dean of the graduate school, what at that time was called director, and I come in to Dr. Lander. I write about this in Washington, and I tell him, "Dr. Lander, I want to write on the Netziv of Volozhin." I give him a whole proposal. By the way, a lady, years later, wrote on the Netziv of Volozhin at Hebrew University. And Dr. Lander says, "All right, I have to present it to the faculty. We'll be in touch." About 10 days later, I get a call from Lander. "Arnold, we're ready to speak with you. Come into Dr. Lander's office." And we both acted this out decades later at the home of Herb and Toby Willick in Jerusalem. I acted it out before Dr. Lander came. When he came, he reacted it. He acted it, and we both cried at the same moment. We both told it with the same tears. And Dr. Lander says, "Arnold, We've been looking for someone like you. I'm quoting him. I apologize for quoting him now. We need someone who's a Talmud Chacham, but can do an honest historical job. I had a Rebbe who has nothing left in the world. His children never married. There are no grandchildren. I want you to write on Bernard Revel. And with that, he gets up and he comes over to me, puts his arms around my shoulder, and he says, Arnold, I want you to know this will be his only monument. Please do a good job. And he starts to cry with his hands around my shoulder. Do you know that if this were 1963, I could never be assigned doing a doctorate on Bernard Revel? You'll ask why? Because I was walking through Geula about 3 years ago now, on my way to a son-in-law who's a dentist, and he's in the Haredi area, and I love to walk, and when I walk, I don't want my wife to hear this, I look at the bookshops, what's new, and as I turn into Rehov Malachi, and they have that big bookstore half a block down, I see a book on Kovna. Now, my grandmother came from Kovna. Yasayis Runi by Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, Gibraltar. And I take the book and I'm Matchil the Daf Teif. I don't know how to say that in English. I'm flipping the pages. And I take a look. I see Revel's picture. And I see the Revel family. And then I see Kalvariski. And I say, wait a minute, my mother, Hakmea Chinik, always used to tell me, and I listened with one ear, my mother was born in Harlem, what does she know about Kovna? And my father was born in Harlem, what do they know about Eastern Europe? And my mother's told me the Kalvariski families, her mother and Azay Frum, and she would give me names and tell me stories. Well, I bought the book quicker than you can say Jackie Robinson. And I take it home and I go through it and I can't believe my eyes and I call a Talmud Chaver of mine, a professor at Hebrew University, Shol Stampfer, who deals with Eastern Europe, and he knew about the book and he says, look, call Gibraltar, he's in his 90s but he's with it. I call Gibraltar, we start talking, we start corresponding. Rabbi Revel was my cousin. If I'm correct, his grandparents are my great-great-grandparents. So if this had been 1962-63, they could have never assigned me a doctorate on Bernard Revel because a karov is pasul le'edud. So this is a Rebbe's story. Bididi havi uvda. And finally, let me conclude. Potkin b'kavod achsanya. Let me endorse b'kavod achsanya. I'm very blessed. First of all, we have a wonderful faculty here. Rabbi Miller and I have been together for, it's well over 40 years already. I'm in Israel 45 years. It's well over 40 years. Rabbi Bednash, Rabbi Mann, Rabbi Bednash. I tell him all the time, I know you're a great Rebbe for one reason. I can judge a Rebbe in 1 second. He's always surrounded by students. That's the sign of a great Rebbe. Rabbi Mann is my own Talmud, married to a Talmidah. And we go back to, I know yet the grandparents, and what a faculty. So it's a blessing to be here. And I have to tell you, Stephanie Strauss, who now is the legal signature of this entire campus. She's not only a student, but she's married to my student, Alan Strauss, as well. And it's just a pleasure for me. This whole affair, was really Stephanie's idea. What do I need affairs for? But Stephanie pushed it, and I was speaking with New York before. I told them I saw enough food here. Halavai will be enough people to eat all the food that was prepared. And achron, chaviva. There's a young lady named Sherry Levy. I can tell you that Chazal and the Rav Chaim,
that's my family. They know all she does for me, so they're saying thank you. But I want to say thank you a little differently. The rabbi we spoke about gave a famous talk, YU Rabbinic Assembly, that the Rabbanim are the Kohanim of today. So if we are the Kohanim, the Levim have to help us. I'm the happiest Kohen alive that I have Sherry as my right hand. And I want to thank you all for coming out this evening, Erev Shabbos, Erev Shavuot, and paying honor to yours truly, a humble Rebbe, but above all, to Rav Dov Revel and Rav Eliezer Silva, and Halavai, their memory should live on. We should take the message to heart, and we should build a beautiful, fabulous country here, better and better, and know how to blow the proper trumpet that will speak to the citizens of Israel at this moment in time, a glorious past, and an even more fulfilling, enlightening, and inspiring future. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.